is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Tanin. DNA Today informs on what's happening in the genetic world, and during my broadcast here, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through news and interviews. Guests usually include genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and professors. And today's a different kind of episode where we're going to be discussing the Genetic Counseling Graduate School application process, which is really involved, which is why I'm going to be doing two episodes on this. And for this discussion, I'm joined by a few fellow applicants. We started the cycle in 2017 and ended this past April in 2018. And so we're all really, really excited to be enrolling in Genetic Counseling Graduate Schools this fall in 2018. So as you guys know, I'm Kira Tanin, I'm from Connecticut, and I will be attending Sarah Lawrence College.
I'm Katie. I am from Colorado and will be attending the University of Alabama at Birmingham.
My name is Brianna Vandenadel. I'm from British Columbia in Canada, and I'll be attending the University of British Columbia.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brennan Linton, and I'm from San Diego, California, and I will be attending Keck Graduate Institute this fall.
So we've got a pretty good panel of different people from really all over the place. We're pretty spread out in North America. And before we kind of get into the show, I do want to let you guys know that early next year, we're going to be releasing a follow-up episode, part two of this. And that's going to focus on the second part of the application process, where we're doing interviews, ranking, and matching. And we'll kind of explain what ranking and matching is and all that in the next episode. And we'll release that January, February, something in there so that you can listen to it before you guys go out on interviews. So we're kind of trying to time it with the application cycle. And the other thing I want to plug before we get into it is that the blog post associated with this episode has information from over 50 different applicants that were also in our application cycle where they share their experiences. So I've compiled that into one blog post so that you're hearing from not only the four of us, but many, many more people to really try and get you a good view on what this application cycle looks like. We're going to start with what really is the overall application timeline, because it is kind of long. I think, Brenna, you were going to talk a little bit about what that looks like.
Yeah, so the overall application timeline is pretty tedious in of itself. Applications generally open around August or early September, and I would definitely advise doing applications as early as you can because you never know when life can get in the way. And then they're usually due around winter, so December and January, and then in late March or late January to March is usually when interview invitations will roll around. And then interviews will be held shortly after that from February through April. And then the long-awaited match day will be at the end of April. So this past year, it was on the 27th of April when everyone was basically glued to their computer screens looking to see if they were matched.
Yes, and the night before was interesting. I had to like totally distract myself because you're just, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? You know, where are you going to end up? And this application process is not cheap. How much did it cost you guys from like kind of beginning of, you know, when you're throwing in GREs and GRE prep courses possibly and the application fees and then possibly plane tickets? What did that end up looking like for you guys?
Well, for me, I applied to many schools and the application process alone was about $700, and that's not including the GRE or transcripts or plane tickets. So pretty hefty sum.
Yeah, for me, I was in my first year, because I applied 2 years in a row. In my first year, I had I applied for three places and interviewed at three places. And in Canada, traveling out of British Columbia, especially where I am in the north, is very pricey. I ended up spending over, I would say, $2,000 on travel, hotel costs, and application costs. For my three schools. And then in my second year, I applied for three and interviewed at one. And I think I spent around $800, including a subscription fee to the Journal of Genetic Counseling.
Yeah, I definitely spent a few $1,000s overall, including flights and hotels and everything. There are a few ways that I know that there are other people that have saved money just by taking, like, driving instead of flying, or staying at Airbnbs instead of hotels. So, like, there are ways to manage your money a little bit better than I did. So it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I applied to around 7 schools, and mine ended up being a little over 1,000. But mine, I was able to drive everywhere because I only applied to schools that were, like, in my area of kind of New England and that. Now, did any of us have to apply multiple times that experienced the cycle this past year and previous years?
Yeah, I did. I applied for the previous cycle before the match program was actually put into place, and then I applied for this cycle as well.
So you'll have lots of insight on our next episode of kind of comparing the two and how they were different, especially towards the end of finding out, you know, where you're going, where you're not going, and things like that.
Yeah, it was definitely a different process, so I'm excited to talk about that.
And as for preparing for applications, did you guys find any resources to be particularly helpful with knowing what to include in applications or different advice on?
So for me, what I did was that I Googled everything. I personally don't know of any other gen ed counseling applicants at the time when I was applying. So what I did was that I looked at basically all the blogs I could find. I looked at Maps and Genes. I looked at the student blogs for Sarah Lawrence and Emery. And of course, my Gene Council had a really great article about what to expect when applying and interviewing. And what I also found helpful was forums. While they not be totally accurate, it was a great sounding board to discuss the application process with other students who were currently going through the same experience as I was. And that was through the Discord communications app and the Grad Cafe forum.
And for me, I figure between the four of us, we'll talk about all the kind of how we prepared for applications and generically. So, you know, there was a lot of Googling, a lot of reading up on the different programs. But one thing I really want to say was helpful for me was the Journal of Genetic Counseling. I mentioned it earlier. I subscribed to it and I found it really helpful because it kind of just got me up to date with the current events and research in the field. And it helped me with the, I guess, lingo in the interviews. It helped me have, like, fluent conversations about what I know about the field. Additionally, a really helpful resource for me, believe it or not, was Kira's podcast. I listened to DNA Today for the past couple years while preparing myself for the interview, and I think it was really helpful just to hear about what genetic counselors in the field were doing currently.
Another helpful one is about geneticcounselors.com. There's a lot of free information on there. Journal of Genetic Counseling is amazing. If you can't afford that, aboutgeneticcounselors.com is great because you can actually watch simulated sessions with genetic counselors and patients so that you get a better idea of that, and again picking up on the lingo and different aspects that can kind of pop up and all of that. Which prerequisites did you guys have to do for your specific schools? Might be a little different in Canada, so we can kind of include your perspective on that. Which are the ones that you guys had to complete before attending or applying, I guess?
For my applications, I had to have stats, biochem, psychology, and then it was kind of recommended for a lot of schools to have, like, anatomy, or, like, higher level genetics courses.
And then for mine, similar courses were required as well. They required, I think it was 4 months of counseling experience, so peer counseling, crisis line work, etc. And a couple of mine actually required an embryology course, developmental embryology, and it was offered to the University of Cincinnati online. So a lot of us, I think, that applied for the schools in Canada had to go online for the Cincinnati course and complete it there. And it was a really awesome course. I strongly advise anyone who is reading up on it to take that course because the professor was so hilarious.
Same. I took that course, and it was fantastic.
Wasn't it?
Some other things that aren't, like, classes but are important, like, experiences would be like working with people with that have special needs, any kind of counseling or advocacy that you can get. And then a big one that schools love is having shadowing experience. If you can't get in to shadow a grant counselor, watching like simulations or even just having exposure, interviewing, talking to grant counselors should show them enough that you know what you're talking about. You know that you're really interested in it.
And I did find that a lot of genetic counselors were pretty eager to talk to us if you reach out. Like if you're not able to get shadowing experience and you want to instead just interview or, you know, have a Skype chat with a genetic counselor, a lot of them were really willing to do so. And it was helpful, I find.
And a resource for that is going to findageneticcounselor.com. At the bottom of the page, they have a link specifically like for students. And you can search for genetic counselor in your area, and it will pop up, you know, a bunch of them for me in Connecticut. And it will actually say under there, student contact welcome. So you already know that they're very excited about talking to students and everything. And that can be a good way of finding genetic counseling, shadowing experience, or again, saying, can I buy you a cup of coffee and learn more about your job or something like that? People love free drinks. So, but to round off, the prereqs, also, I think we mentioned biochem, but general biology, obviously genetics, that should be a no-brainer. Molecular genetics or cell bio, basic chemistry, and psychology. Organic chemistry, I think, was also one that a lot required. And for me, I think only one of the schools required embryology, but I'm actually going to that school, so it worked out taking that. Another random one is calculus. One of my schools required that, and I didn't take it, and they like brought that up, and I was like, well, I don't really want to take that, so... that one seems a little harder for me. I'm not a math person, but those are kind of generally the courses that you either need to take or that just make you look a little bit better maybe than other students. So going back to talking about genetic counseling shadowing experience, how did you guys end up getting your shadowing experience and how much experience were you able to have?
I was extremely lucky for my genetic counseling shadowing experience because there is no genetic counseling clinics anywhere in northern British Columbia. The closest units are in Vancouver. And when I reached out to Vancouver just on my own to look for shadowing experiences, a lot of the time the answer was that unless you volunteer in our clinic, you can't shadow. And I live in northern British Columbia, about 8 hours away. So since I didn't live near them, I couldn't volunteer, so I couldn't shadow. So I was really lucky that I had a friend who knew somebody who knew somebody who was able to get me in. Someone I knew in Prince George actually had a sister who worked as a genetic counselor in Hawaii.
Wow.
Who had gone to Vancouver and had made a lot of connections there. So she set me up with someone in Abbotsford who then set me up with someone in Vancouver who was able to help me get a shadowing experience. And then by the start of my applications, I only had one day of shadowing, but I found that I had 4 or 5 sessions that I had shadowed. So it was really interesting.
And that's kind of a good example of like how challenging it can be to get genetic counseling, you know, shadowing and exposure, because a lot of places, if you're not in their system somehow, you can't just sit in on a session because of HIPAA laws and other things like that. So it really can be a challenge. And I think that's something that the genetic counseling community is really trying to fix so that, you know, it's hard to apply and be like, I want to do this career if you've never actually seen it in action. So it's important to, you know, learn about it in some capacity.
Yeah, and I found I was really restricted by my location, and I was worried that it would affect my interviews and my applications, considering I wasn't able to have that experience, but I mentioned it in my interview, and a lot of the program committees were saying things like, you know, we understand that you are limited based on your location, so we've like factored that into how we considered your application, so that was really nice.
And I think like the most important thing is that you've seen a few cases that you can comment on and bring up during an interview. That way you know, maybe you don't have the quantity, but you have that quality there that you've actually seen either case start to finish, or you saw part of it and caught up with a genetic counselor to understand the other parts or something like that. What other extracurricular activities did you guys do to enhance your applications other than the genetic counseling shadowing?
Yeah, I actually got a certification in mental health first aid which is something that, at least from a couple of interviews, is something that they don't really see a ton. So it's a lot like the courses for regular first aid. You go in, you sit through different kind of lectures, you do different kind of role-playing stuff, and get to learn what to do in certain situations with people who might have be having like a mental health crisis. And then I also coach a high school cheerleading team, so that helps teach me a lot about just communication and time management, which is a big thing for grad school.
That's really neat. I think I got something similar to yours, but in Canada, I got the ASSIST certificate, the Applied Suicide Intervention Skills Training. And I actually got that through my crisis line work. So that was one of my extracurricular activities, as I worked, I volunteered on a crisis line. I also did a couple other things during my undergraduate. I did peer counseling, I did resident assistant, I did some research in genetics with NSERC. And then I actually, one really neat experience that I think enhanced my resume or my application on the second year around was I was really fortunate to get the opportunity to be a full instructor of a psychology 101 course in my local college. I had one of my professors during my university degree help set that up. So I got to actually teach a course in psychology. And I think that was really helpful, because not only did it enhance my application, but it helped me, you know, bring up more experiences about, you know, times I had to deliver bad news and et cetera.
Yeah, one thing I don't think that any of us have mentioned is research experience, which a lot of schools really like seeing. I worked in a research lab through undergrad, and then this past year I've worked in a full-time in a lab, and I think that's really improved my experiences with that, because a lot of schools do have thesis. Everybody has some kind of research component, so any kind of background in that is helpful.
Yeah, I also did a six-month internship in a cytogenetics lab, like full-time, to get my bachelor's. And I think that was really helpful, because I did kind of like a mini thesis, I guess, of having like a research study and everything, and having to write, you know, 25-page paper, all of that. And I think that's given me a lot of experience in terms of doing the testing that, as a genetic counselor, I'm going to be ordering. So when I'm actually explaining how testing will work, I'll be able to say, well, you know, I'll be able to explain it a little bit better because I've actually done it myself in the lab. So I think having lab experience is really great. And there is a thing called laboratory genetic counselors. So you can still kind of end up being in the lab in a different kind of role as a genetic counselor. But, you know, you could end up using those skills more than you think.
Yeah, I'm totally with Katie about working in research and getting that as part of your extracurricular experience, because in my case, my grades were on the lower end compared to other applicants, and I wasn't like a stellar straight A student or anything like that. So I really tried to balance my application by increasing my extracurricular activities and advocacy experiences with my grades and my academics and things like that. So of course, you know, you have to have your advocacy through hotlines and text lines. But I also did, like Katie mentioned, I also worked in a lab my undergrad, and then I went to biotech after I graduated just to get some real life experience. And I found that it really helped me round me out as an applicant, and also made me feel more prepared for graduate school and becoming like a more mature professional.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that, because I also don't have stellar grades. So I think having a really solid resume of experience kind of in some ways speaks more to skills and everything, because once you're in the job force, you're not getting tested on things as much. It's more what can you do and what skills you have. From these experiences, did you guys use this in writing your personal essays or statements?
I talked a bit about my experiences in my personal essay. However, I focused a lot of it on like a personal experience, a different personal experience. So my personal essay was mostly around the topic of Prince George, British Columbia, and Northern BC, because this is kind of where I was raised, and I was really aware of the fact that there was no genetic counseling services in Prince George and Northern BC, and I felt that it left the populations of Northern BC really underserved. So I wrote my essay actually on Prince George, and then I kind of incorporated the experiences I had during my undergrad and after my undergrad into that. You know, what I love about Prince George, and the reason I love it is it offered me all these opportunities. And then I tied it all together at the end by talking about my goal in genetic counseling, and that's to bring genetic counseling to the North. So I think that it was a way of kind of standing out, providing like a different thing for them to read. Because, you know, they're shuffling through a million of these personal statements, or not a million, probably 100. And they're reading through all of these personal statements. And one piece of advice I was given is really show something about you that makes you stand out. So it's important to talk about your experiences, but also to talk about something that makes you unique and, you know, what your goals are.
Yeah, I agree with Brianna 100%. I think it's really about making your personal statement or essay with that personal element and feeling like, how can you best project yourself onto the paper and for the admissions committee to read it and get a feel for you? Because for me, I wrote about a really personal experience I had in my childhood about a misdiagnosis I had and how having a genetic counselor would have helped in that situation and how it would have impacted me and my family. And from there, I kind of twisted in and added in how my experiences would shape me to become a genetic counselor and just how I would fit in with the program and everything like that. So it's all about tweaking it and giving it your own personal identity, essentially.
Really neat. I like what you did with that. What about you, Kira? What did you do for your personal essay?
So for mine, I mostly wrote about this show, actually, but I focused it on the patient advocates that I've had on the show and how much I've learned from them and see how important a role of a genetic counselor has been in their lives or would have been if they didn't have genetic counseling, and the skills that I've worked on in kind of communications in this show and, you know, my roles outside of this show on how those will kind of translate into becoming a genetic counselor. You want to answer why you want to be a genetic counselor and why you would be a good genetic counselor. I think that's kind of a good perspective to take it from. As everyone said, you really do want to be as personal as you can, you know, without being like too TMI, obviously. But focusing on that, I think, is really good. And having a focus of your paper is good to maybe focus on one experience or something like that. And having it write like a narrative, I think, is great too. It took me a long time to write mine. I don't know how long it took you guys to write yours, but I started in August and I didn't finish until maybe the week before apps were due in December. So it's writing is rewriting, I've learned.
Yeah, I definitely had various versions. I think I started kind of just generally in like over the summer, but didn't finish each of mine till later on. I also tried to include something specific about the school I was applying to and try to kind of tie that in with my personal statement. That way it wasn't just kind of a blanket personal statement sent out to all of the schools.
That's a really good point. Yeah, in mine, I wasn't as integrated, I guess, but I had a paragraph on why I wanted to go to that particular program and tried to pick out something unique about it. I think that's a really good tactic because it shows that you actually care about that program and it's not just, oh, another school, so it's a better chance of me becoming a genetic counselor. So who did we ask to write our letters of recommendation? This can be a really key aspect, especially going into genetic counseling, of how you're relating with other people and how professional you are. I know there are some requirements, but who did you guys end up asking?
I had my lab PI write one, my genetics professor, biochem professor, and then the GC that I shadowed all wrote one for me. Most of the schools I applied to only required 3 letters. One of them required 4. And then I kind of asked around and to see if the other schools would accept 4, and a lot of them did. So I ended up sending like more than they asked.
Yeah, I was in a similar position as Katie in that most of my schools requested 3 letters of recommendation as a minimum. And usually they suggested someone who knew you from volunteering, your academics, and also in a professional setting, so maybe your workplace. And for me, I asked my PI from my lab that I worked in undergrad, I asked my supervisor who I worked in at my biotech company, and I also asked a genetics professor that I had while I was in school. But because some of my grades were low, I had to ask more people to write me letters. So maybe like 4 or 5 letters just to supplement my application and show that I can do graduate work and that I'm up to par. So I also asked a neuroscience professor that I had back in school who could totally vouch for me. And I also went the unconventional route, and I actually asked my theater professor to write one for me because he could totally attest to how I'm passionate about genetics and genetic counseling and how I can use that to really power through graduate school and show that I could be the genetic counseling applicant that they're looking for.
I found, because I applied for 3 schools, 2 of them required 3 and only 3, and then the other one actually asked for 2. And a lot of the requirements were one recommendation had to be from a professor, and then another recommendation had to be from someone who's experienced your counseling work. So, of course, I asked one professor. In my first year, it was my genetics professor, the one who was my supervisor for my genetics research. And then also my peer counseling for first year. And then I asked the coordinator of the crisis center for my second year. And then for my third recommendation, they said just use a personal reference. So I actually reached out to the coordinator of the university residence who knew me for about 2 years when I was a research assistant and knew me really well and knew how passionate I was about the work I did and how much work I put into things that I loved. And so I think he was a really good reference for me, just my personal character.
Yeah, for me, I had 2 genetic counselors that I work with or shadowed, and I had my program director from my undergraduate program write mine. And I have to say, for mine, I think it was usually accepts like 3 letters or requires 3. I didn't have any requiring more than 3. How is Canada applying a little bit different from ours? Have you picked up on differences, Brianna?
Well, something we haven't mentioned yet, and we could have at the prereq section, is the GRE. So the GRE is required for, I believe, all the schools in the States. Is that correct?
I think so. All my schools required it, and I applied to 7.
Yeah, I think so.
So as I know, the GRE is required for all. In Canada, it's not. Woo! So that was one big difference, is I didn't have to write the GRE, which was nice. But I think the biggest difference is that in Canada, there's 4 schools currently for genetic counseling. And don't quote me on this, but I believe for each of the schools, there's 3 seats at one of them, 7 at another one, 6 in the other one, and then I want to say 4 or 5 in the other one. So it's very competitive in Canada. And oftentimes what I've heard of genetic counselors in the field currently who are from Canada, I heard that they wrote the GRE and applied abroad, applied through the States because, not abroad, sorry, international, and applied in the States because of how competitive it was. Oftentimes people and Canadian applicants will do their first round of applications just in the Canadian schools and then go from there and apply for the ones in the States as well the second time around. Yeah, that's probably the only differences I can think of. Because it's so competitive in Canada, one thing I would recommend to any Canadian students thinking of applying to genetic counseling is, when we were talking earlier about different extracurricular activities, try to hit as many of those as you can. Honestly, get as much experience and make yourself as well-rounded as a person as possible when it comes to the different extracurricular experiences, because the more you can put on the application and the more you can talk about, the more you stand out.
Yeah, definitely try to like kind of check every box, but make sure that you're kind of doing it full out. So don't do it for a week just to check it off. Make sure it's throughout the year or a couple years if you have that.
And before we wrap up the episode, I did want to ask you guys why you kind of ended up at the school you're at in terms of what aspects did you like? And what features did we focus on when applying to schools of, oh, I kind of like schools that, you know, are in a certain area or have this, you know, certain reputation?
This is my first time applying, and I have heard for years about how competitive genetic counseling programs were. So I kind of wanted to do my best on the first run. So I applied to 11, and I know that's a lot more than other applicants apply to, but just wanted to be on the safe side. So for me, my main thing was location. Could I imagine myself living there for the next 2 years? Could my significant other prosper in that environment as well? And then from there, I kind of looked at each unique feature that the program had. So for KGI, when I went to the interview, everything just felt right. Like I had a gut instinct that I fit here and I really enjoyed the curriculum. And I love that they had a unique twist on it and that it was the only genetic counseling program housed within a school of pharmacy to get that pharmacogenetics emphasis. And that's something that I really loved about the program and why I ended up at it. So I think it's a lot of features, and it's important to focus on what works best for you. Like, don't use someone else's factors to compare with yours, because sometimes they might not be the same.
Definitely. I think mine are somewhat similar. I definitely kind of looked at location to start off, mostly just looking at where I had extended family, where I would kind of feel more comfortable at, and then looking at something that was unique about that school. Because every school has to kind of check the same boxes, have the same general things at it to have accreditation. But each one has something that's unique to that, very different, like, from any other of the schools. For example, for Alabama, the second year, you actually spend a semester in Alabama in Birmingham and then a semester somewhere else. So my second year, I'm going to end up spending a semester doing rotations in Memphis. So I thought that was a really cool thing. I've always dreamed about working at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and now I'll get to go through and rotate through their hospital during one of my semesters.
In Canada, there's four schools, so I mean, apply for four, unless you want to get the GRE.
Well, that about wraps up today's episode. I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours. We did before this episode of kind of learning about each other. But again, I'm Kira Deneen. I'll be going to Sarah Lawrence College next month.
I'm Katie. I'll be going to the University of Alabama, Birmingham.
And I'm Brianna, and I'll be going to the University of British Columbia.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'm Brianna, and I'll be going to KGA. And additionally, if you're interested in more resources for prospective and current GC students alike, I also contribute to the Maps and Genes blog, which you can find at mapsandgenes.wordpress.org. So if you're interested, check it out.
Yeah, that's a great resource. Lots of info on there.
Thanks for having us, Kira.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
I think it's really great to hear from everybody, because we're all pretty different in terms of our backgrounds and what schools we apply to. So I think that ended up kind of being a good mix of things. If you guys want to learn more, you can go to dnapodcast.com. Don't forget the blog post on there is representative of over 50 genetic counseling students that are going to be enrolling this fall. So you can check that out. I'm on Twitter at DNA Podcast, Instagram at DNA Radio, and any questions for the four of us can be sent to info@dnapodcast.com. So thanks for listening, guys. Join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.